Okay, this is continuing with D.W. Heitman on 17 May 1981. So you were saying basically that it would just be a very big job to do that sort of thing in 1937 or 38.
That's right. And then again, we were getting out of sunspot maximum periods when the hiss was dropping off. There's little doubt at all that the reason it was so obvious to us at the time it was first observed was that the solar activity was at quite a high level.
Right, and then you began to find these correlations with chromospheric phenomena and so forth. Can you tell me about the this woman, Miss Nellie Corey, was her name?
Yes, Corry.
Right.
She lived at Walton on the Hill, which is in Surrey,
mm-hmm.
and had an amateur license. She was the daughter of a rich shipping magnate.
I see.
And so she could spend a lot of time on her amateur radio. She didn't have an occupation as such to
mm-hmm.
earn a living. She had the call sign G2YL.
Right.
And the Radio Society started a section which I believe was called Scientific Observations Committee or something
yes.
of that type. I could check on it. But for a few years she acted as the, I think they called it secretary of that
right.
committee, and we people that were doing various aspects of VHF propagation and allied research sent our monthly reports into that.
I see. So she was the coordinating
right.
center for all this.
Yeah. And she also, after I'd drawn attention to the hiss, made quite a few observations on it, generally of a time nature, and sort of confirmed what I had
mm-hmm.
said. Williams of Portsmouth was another member of this committee.
Was his interest in this basically because of your reports also?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, I asked them to confirm what I had found.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, it was called the G60H hiss.
I see.
And the reason I wrote to Appleton when he did his big ballyhoo thing was basically that all these people got onto me and said, well, if you're not going to do something about it, we will.
Right, yeah, right. You mentioned that in one of your letters, right?
She was one of the most adamant.
Yeah,
people.
Yeah.
So I just trying to think whether, in fact, she made any particular contributions other than coordinating. I think Williams, if anything, was, the more original thinker in this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, but who was the person who actually got interested in trying to look at the solar observers' records and find out about exact timing of correlations and this kind of thing?
Well, I started that. I don't know if anybody else actually at that time communicated with the observatories. This seemed to me to be the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really why I wrote these various letters.
And you wrote to the Greenwich Observatory and
that's right.
and to this fellow at Mount Wilson Observatory,
right.
Richardson, and
yeah.
so forth.
Yes, it was known that these people were studying these sort of things. I think I was getting various scientific journals then and read of these people's names and so on and the work they were doing. And
so you were reading things like Astrophysical Journal and so forth?
Yes.
Right. Now, what we're talking about now is follow-up things once you've got this basic discovery. And you said the spectrum was one thing of interest. Something else that I saw in these documents is the time of occurrence, of course, was only in the daytime. So that was a definite clue to the sun.
That's right.
Because as we said, you had no directional information per se.
No, that's true.
Now, what other kind of clues could you get as to what it might be?
You hear a dead silence. I'm trying to think.
I'm not sure I can really think of anything else you could have done either. But
no, well, I somehow or other concluded that, you know, it was extraterrestrial.
Well, you knew that from the simultaneous observation with the guy in the States.
Yes.
Probably.
And if it was coming from outside the Earth, the most probable direction would be the Sun. And the daylight aspect of it, I think, was the thing which suggested that I should check up with what was happening on the Sun.
Right, right.
It was as simple as
that. Simple,
as that.
And it corresponded with the, and of course the days are such different length here in England that quite a striking difference. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Now another thing you mentioned. Well, what was it then that finally made you begin to shift over to the idea that this was actually electromagnetic radiation as opposed to particles?
First of all, the correlation with time of reception over long distances on the Earth.
Right.
With the particle type of thing, you would expect wide ranges of time change.
Now, how many of those actual good correlations did you have? Did you have more than that one with the...
Oh, yes. More particularly only in with English amateurs. There was one in Europe. I'm trying to think who it was. I probably had it logged.
It's probably in that long list of things that I have here.
But there was that plus the spectrum aspect of it, that corpuscle would have no marked spectrum change.
Once again,
in other words, if you had, for example, charged particles, as in the instance of rain,
right?
You could hear that from very low frequencies up to the very high, and there's no change at all.
Right, right.
Whereas the hiss at times dropped very considerably in the lower frequency end.
Right. So this still then, however, could have been electromagnetic radiation originating in the Earth's atmosphere and caused by some particles from the Sun.
That's true.
Now, what was your thinking about that?
I was never quite sure whether it was a secondary effect or a first order.
Yeah, well, of course, Jansky had the same problem.
That's right.
If you look at his papers, he had the same problem, and he concluded that it wasn't, but really only... There really wasn't any proof to that. It was just that it seemed more reasonable in some sense.
Well, I would think that is it, because you'll realize when I was discussing, for example, sporadic E, I was not sure if this was the same sort of thing that was getting diverted by ionized clouds in the atmosphere, or whether it was coming indirect,
mm-hmm.
or whether the source was entirely in the atmosphere.
Right.
One could only say, I suppose this was the thought at the time, that it was probably electromagnetic for the reasons that I've stated. And the correlation in time with the origin on the Sun, with the correlation with the eruptions on the Sun in time was identical.
With the light electromagnetic radiation,
so,
right?
You could argue, yeah, you could argue that it might be getting diverted, or it may be causing some secondary type of radiation in the atmosphere, but the source still must have been the Sun.
Right, right. But what you're saying, it seems to me, though, is that you were not dead sure before the war that, that it really was radio waves straight from the Sun that were impinging on your aerial. It seemed quite reasonable that it might be, but you weren't wholly sure.
No, I think that's right.
Right. Now, Another basic question to ask you is that just what we've gone through in the last minutes would have made a tremendous letter to nature around 1938 or 39.
Right.
Why did you never do this?
I don't think probably I was so much well-versed in the ways of communication at that time.
You mean some scientific publication?
Right. I wrote another letter to Nature after the war on, what was this, HF tropospheric propagation. And I think I wrote some other subject, I can't really remember what it was, which seemed to be of considerable interest at the time. But in pre-war days, regarding myself as an amateur and not being really aware of the scientific field,
right.
My means of communication were to decipher journals to which I wrote.
Right. And I gather then that Ratcliffe or any of the other scientists you were writing to weren't encouraging you to do this either.
No, they were not. Certainly not.
Right. Well, okay, that basically covers what I wanted to cover about it. Are there any other points that you'd like to make about this discovery or the follow-up work that was done?
I don't think so. I think I've given you, I've never sort of professed to do any more or any less than I did. Like all these things, you at the time, it's much more difficult to surmise what the probable causes were than they are when they are more better established. And,
indeed, yes.
The other thing is that, like many other of these things, that you don't realize that it's the beginning of an era.
Right, right.
Probably you didn't visualize what it might bring in its, you know, future years.
Right. And it's very easy to look back with 2020 hindsight.
That's right.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Above all things, I'm glad I was blessed with a vivid imagination. And that cuts a lot of, produces a lot of shortcuts.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Now, where do you want?
That is the interview with D.W. Heitmann on 17 May 1981.